Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro-practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone, and that's where you come in. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community, and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we talked to Amanda Hennessy. She's the founder of Boston Public Speaking and San Diego Public Speaking. She's part of the team at San Diego Women's Week, and she's the author of Your Guide to Public Speaking: Build Your Confidence, Find Your Voice, and Inspire Your Audience. Since Amanda is both a voice coach and a speaking coach, and those are a couple of skills that are near and dear to my heart and my bank account, I was selfishly looking forward to learning whatever I could from her in this conversation. And I have to say, she didn't disappoint. In between sharing some really solid mindsets to settle your nerves and calm your mind, to techniques for engaging your audience in live and virtual settings, Amanda was nothing short of entertaining. Oh, and you need to watch the video to check out her pink background. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed the live conversation with Amanda. And for this episode, our backstage guest is Boston, Massachusetts architect Isra Banks. She's the founder of Trivec Architects and also adjunct faculty at Boston Architectural College. I'm curious to hear their takeaways, so let's go backstage and listen in as my co-host Catherine McPhail, Isra, and I talk about our conversation with Amanda Hennessy. I thought that that conversation with Amanda was fantastic. It was fun. She's funny. She's obviously very animated. She's got the acting background. Sparkly, yes. Yes, I've learned that I need to be a flower and open my petals and be sparkly.
Well, I thought that was a lovely suggestion. So you can imagine yourself being this beautiful thing that people are going to get some good information from or get something from as the audience, and you get to be a beautiful flower on top of it.
Yeah, I thought that was a good analogy. You know, it's, again, a lot of people, I think, you know, as we've gone through this week, we've talked a lot about public speaking, and a lot of people don't like the idea. They're nervous, whatever. And that's because we make it about us. But if you are that flower that's there, you know, for the pollinators, for the bees and the butterflies and things like that, it's a great analogy. Hey, I am just here to be of service to the people in the audience.
Yeah, I get that. When I first started teaching, I was especially like, there was a shift from 20 students to 45 students, and I was probably nervous and terrified, especially the first time. I remember one time I'm telling my students, my name is Richard Banks, and I'm nervous because, and the students laugh. But later on, with practice, I started shifting my focus from being in the classroom to those are my students. I need to get to know them. I need to learn their names. I need to know as much and memorize as much as I can about them and know them as people before we move to the next session. And eventually, I think it shifted a lot, and I did not get training in that at the beginning, but later on, the school provided some training, and kind of it's different, more focused for that, like how the students focus, expand, how they're taking information, how much words you're saying in a minute. But basically, it's very similar. I see Amanda have used storytelling. She shifted her energy and body language from like changed her voice, interacted with people, and so yeah, I think
showed us her belly, pretty, which is good. Icebreaker.
Yeah. I also like her focus on mindset.
I know I've led and taught so many different things, and sometimes there's huge attendance and sometimes it's small. And what I really try to get into is a sense of like, I'm just going to trust this experience is what it needs to be for the participants. Sure. As a coach, if my programs are more filled, then yeah, I make more cash, but I think life is bigger than that. And I think sometimes when I have like a really intimate group, I'm like, this is what these people needed. They needed something to feel really safe to have that transformative experience, or that audience. Yes, we needed it to feel intimate. That was going to serve the people in the room. Or like, it's really big. Great. The group energy is what's needed for these particular people. Great. Like, it can all be good. Yes, we may have expectations. And then it's like, oh, only three people showed up. But three people showed up. And like, how can we have a great time with them? Because like then they showed up and then you're like, oh no, all right, I guess I'll do it. And you're bringing this energy and they're like, oh wow, she doesn't seem good. I'm not telling any of my friends about this, right? This is lame. So like, we just want to keep being like, I'm psyched to be here for whoever's here. Like, be the flower, let the audience be the butterfly and the bees, let them circle around, you just keep being gorgeous.
It made me think, because you know, we went to architecture school, right? And you go through architecture school and you present projects, you have your critiques, you know, your juries and things like that that you're presenting for. And I think about that, and I think a lot of people assume then that people come out of architecture school and they're good at presenting. But my question is, did you get any training? Did either of you get any training in architecture school about how to present? I didn't. We were just sort of thrown into it and forced to figure it out, I guess. Did you get any training?
A 15 minutes presentation about don't read from a paper, keep eye contact, or rehearse.
I know I mentioned this a lot, but there was this class when I was in grad school that was called Facing Your Image. And there was this was, you know, before cell phones or anything like that. So it was like a video camera on top of the TV monitor. And we had to stand in front of the class while we watched ourselves talk about presenting whatever subject we were supposed to be talking about. Yeah. And it was horrible. I cried a lot of times in that class. I could not, it was just awful. So I'm really kind of interested in the mindset stuff that she was talking about. Like, I release the need to prove my worth and my unique point of view is valuable, and those things, because yeah, I mean, even though it seems maybe kind of silly, just telling yourself all the time, like she said, whenever you get up at work, just take a look at your affirmations.
How are we thinking about an experience as we prepare for it and do the work to gather our data, our information, our graphics, and rehearse? Because if my agenda underneath it all is from a fear-based place, then this is going to be a beautifully fearful experience. And if it's from more of a place of service and creating something new that's good for the world, making a difference in some way, advocating for someone or something, I think that's that sense of purpose is going to give us more courage. And so here are a few of my faves. A little mantra. So here are a few mantras that I think can be helpful. It's okay if I'm nervous. Accepting how I feel is better than fighting how I feel. Because if you think about we're going out to speak about something we care about, we're taking a risk, right? Or we're coming forward. Do we need to beat ourselves up for having nerves? Does that help us be courageous? No. We need to do all we can to get in a sweet spot, I think, of that self-acceptance. We need to be before we do. And so with that, another mantra I love is, I release the need to prove my worth. Now, you might want to prove that your building will stand. You might want to prove that the town council should approve your plans. You may have to prove those things, but do you need to prove that you have a right to exist or prove that you have self-worth? Let's not have the talk be about that. Let's really keep it what it ideally is about. So that sense of I'm making this about sharing my point of view. Like another mantra I love is my unique point of view is valuable. And I'd say for any of the listeners out there, whether they're live or listening to this through a podcast, I would say sit and see how your body reacts to the thoughts you're having, because your body will tell you if it likes them or not. And I like to think about Marie Kondo, that sense of like, what sparks joy? Like what outfit sparks joy? We're very choosy about our clothing. If we can be choosing, okay, what thought is going to really help my body, my nervous system, and my thinking, let's wear that thought. Let's keep thinking that thought. I'm excited to make a difference, right? Or I'm excited to be here even. Like, I want to be here.
It's hard to remember that the reason why they're asking you to speak at something is because you need to give them some information, and it's not about you, really.
In general, you're at the front of the room in whatever stage setting there is because someone wants to know the information that you have. So they want you to be there. So hopefully that helps, you know, that mind, keeping that in mind can help with the mindset of, you know, the self-worth kind of thoughts. There's the other part of that is people made an effort to get there to hear you. It may simply have been walking down the hall, or it may have been traveling across the country or around the world or across your state or whatever, but people made an effort to come and hear you. So you're definitely worth it. You're worth the effort that they made.
Yeah. And the part where she was talking about how if only three people show up to your talk, like, don't tell yourself nobody showed up, because these three people showed up. And so just give everything you have to those three people. And I thought that was pretty good advice on that one.
I actually had that situation one time. It was four people. It wasn't three people, but I was hired to speak at a conference by an association, and they flew me to Norfolk, Virginia to speak at this conference. And, you know, they talked up how many people would be there and, you know, all of this and how excited they were and all of this. And this was a breakout. It wasn't a keynote. There were four people in the room. And there's that part of me that said, first of all, this is business development for me. So some of you that speak, it's because of business development. And that was the case for me. And so part of me is like, oh my gosh, there's only four people in the room. This isn't a real great business development swing here. And then to find out that really none of the people in the room were my ideal client. So, you know, so then it starts spiraling down, but then to have to back out and say, but there's a reason that they're here. Right? There's a reason that they're here and somebody needs to hear this. I don't know what it is and I don't know why, but I need to bring it. And that was one of those points for me that really sort of solidified. It's easy in that situation to get up in front of 100 people or 400 or 4,000 people. But when it's four people, I think it's even more important. Right? There's somebody, there's a reason that I'm here. There's a reason that somebody needs to hear this. And I've got to bring it just like there's 4,000 people in the rooms. So that was a bit of a test, but I think just a testimonial to why it's important that we give it our best and that we get better, wherever we are. You can be a good speaker, you still get better. Because there's somebody depending on you when you're up there for some reason. And we don't have to know what it is, I don't think, what that reason is.
Like Jeff was saying, four people showed up. And I was thinking that I would take it as an opportunity to lead a more intimate session and get to know the people more and get to know more about them rather than having a larger crowd where you're just seeing faces and reactions. And I think that would be an opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach to it. Yeah, it's Elizabeth asked about being more interactive or engaging, I think. And I really think that's the key. I mean, you don't necessarily want to question and answer with a huge crowd of people, but maybe this is a sick way to think about it, but be a puppet master. You know, can you get them to raise their hands or answer a question or something like that to really get them drawn into the conversation and engaging with it? And you can do that via Zoom or Teams or whatever you use, and you can do that in an auditorium as well.
Make up a story and use one of the audience's names or character. Like, you know, if he was the contractor, he would have, and people would be like, what, me?
That's true. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be teaching a community ed class again. And those make me nervous just because people are sitting there staring at me. Some of them look kind of sour, like they're definitely not buying my act or whatever, you know? So I just won't look at those people, but I'm going to think about, listen to her book again and think about her tips when it comes to presenting stuff about home renovations and try to use the names, like you said, Israel.
Yeah. I try to use the names of the most people I'm frightened, the sour ones, but I never did it. I wonder how it would work if, like, you find someone who's really sour and not enjoying it, and then bring them up on stage or use them as an example. I might sometimes use it for the students who, you know, you're doing some weird stuff or laughing or come to the stage. but not never use it for, like, let's say an angry instructor.
You know, what do you do, right? What do you do when you have those people that aren't necessarily enthused about being there? I think I said this the other day. I was giving a keynote, and about 15 minutes in, someone just said, I mean, this is a whole crowd of people, and someone said out loud to me, you know, he's 10 rows back or something like that. He said, I don't think what you're talking about has any relevance to any of us in the room or something like that.
Ouch.
Yeah. And I mean, I was just stunned. And luckily, thankfully, somebody that was sitting, you know, maybe 10 or 15 feet to his left disagreed with him and said so out loud. And then an argument broke out. You know, other people, you know, kind of an arguing sort of discussion broke out in the audience. And then I'm standing up there going, first of all, what just happened? And how do I rein this back in? And, you know, to me, it felt like this went on for 15 minutes. It was probably closer to 15 seconds or something. But but what do you do, right? Other than hope that that never happens.
Well, that kind of audience feedback is pretty valuable, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I could, did have the confidence to it, but I think a good approach is to bring him up to stage and ask him questions. I think Dale Carnegie gives an example of that with someone who is an inspector who did not know about what he's talking about. And he's inspecting the wood in a lumber factory, and he's new to his job, and the business owner tell him that's true, and he keeps asking him questions. I think that's was a strategy, put him on the spot and start asking him questions. How do you want it to be? How do you, and he brings up, you know, code issues, and eventually the guy agrees and apologizes. The inspector agrees that he was wrong, and he finds out that he was wrong. But I think that would, I don't know if I, I mean, that's just from a book.
I that think would it be would kind be kind
of
hard.
Yeah, it is.
One of the things that I like to do, I mentioned this the other day, but especially as I hopefully will get back to speaking a lot, part of my preparation is watching stand-up comedy, because the comics are the best speakers in the world, right? They're funny and they're concise. They're great storytellers, and their timing is what really sets them apart. And of course, they handle hecklers sometimes, and so you can see examples of that. But that's my encouragement for people that want to get good at speaking, is watch comics. Not for the funny part of it, but the delivery part of it. The funny part's the bonus.
You know, when you were talking about finding your voice and producing a character and all that, did you see the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? Did you watch that show?
That's a great show.
And there's that woman who was a comic in that show, who was like the country lady. And then it turns out that was a complete.
Yep.
Yeah.
She fabrication.
Was. Yes.
Season one.
And she was horrible. Sorry. Yes. She's actually really horrible.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
They went to her house and she was like this horrible, mean person. And I think that's the danger of making up a character while you're on stage, is that if people meet you not on stage, not to say that you're going to be a horrible person not on stage, but if you're making up a character, like there was this guy, and I'm not going to say who he was because, you know, maybe someone will listen, but he was in a band and he'd pretend he was Scottish. And then I found out he wasn't Scottish. I'm like, why are you even pretending? Now I hate you, because it's so awkward. And I totally bought into this fake thing that you were doing, which, it wasn't that long until I found out it was fake.
Yeah.
No, I just don't like it when people pretend they're something they're not.
So I would never try to be funny because I'm not. Never.
Oh, Israel, you are too.
I think, to me, and I don't, you know, I'm not an acting coach or a speaking coach, but I think where you draw the line there is, well, first of all, let me back up half a step, because most of the people that you see, even normal people on social media online, you're not really seeing the real them, right? You're getting a curated version of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whoever you pay attention to, whether it's Gary Vaynerchuk, I talk about him a lot.
That's true.
Seth Godin, we've had him on Context and Clarity Live. Whoever it is, you're seeing a persona. And I think where you draw the line is, and what the way that I think of it is, I think your persona, when you're out there speaking, you know, on your video show, on your podcast or whatever, can be an amplification of yourself, can be an amplification of your best qualities, if you want to think about it that way. But your Scottish, your fake Scottish guy example is what you don't want it to be, right? I think it's, you know, when it becomes inauthentic, you know, to that extreme, I think that's a problem. But when you're amplifying, because, you know, I've talked about this a lot, right? For introverts or ambiverts or whatever, to get up on stage, you know, I'm naturally an introvert. To get up on stage in front of a bunch of people, I've got to generate a lot of energy in order to bring the amount of energy that's necessary to seem like I'm not a dud, right? That I'm, you know, I am energetic on stage and I have some energy and some personality and things like that. So I think generating that and amplifying that, is that the way I am 24 hours a day? No, not at all. Couldn't be. There's no way I could sustain that. But for an hour or, you know, whatever's necessary for that, it's not inauthentic. It's just bringing more energy to it. It's just amplifying certain aspects of my personality. That's where I would draw the line on that. If I tried to, you know, have a Scottish accent, you know, to run with that example, first of all, that wouldn't work very well. But no, I couldn't. Go ahead.
It just feels bad.
I think Catherine mentioned in Clubhouse yesterday that she's I can't say the exact words, but she said she's spontaneous on her podcast because that's who she is, and if she's gonna change it, she's gonna invest more energy probably, and that also resonates with what you just said. For me, when I'm just very in the beginning of my, you know, my recording journey, but bringing that side of me who cares about people rather than bringing a personality who's funny and sparkly like Amanda is much easier, or I'm investing less energy into just showing that side of me rather than trying to, you know, tell jokes and be funny. Mm.
Yeah, like I always want to be, not always, but there have been times when I wish I could be the kind of person who didn't feel really uncomfortable, like, oh my God, hi, how are you? It's so nice to see you. I haven't seen you so long. How's your brother? Like, I would never do that. It feels so weird. So anyway, I just have to be more like Eeyore, which unfortunately, you know, isn't as friendly.
I love Eeyore.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
But I think that's a good way to put it, though. You know, you have to expend energy no matter what. You have to expend energy on something. So why not expend energy on the things that are authentic, right? And so, you know, whether it's Catherine, your style of your podcast, which is, that's the style that I'm much more comfortable in as well. Or it's something else. Why would I spend energy trying to be funny? That's come up. We didn't get to talk about that with Amanda so much, but a lot of people, well, you know, if I try to be funny at the beginning or tell a joke, that's great. If you're not funny, if you don't have any good jokes, I wouldn't spend any energy on that. You know, that seems like a waste of energy. Why not spend energy on the things that you are good at? It's not, I don't think the realm of public speaking is the time to try to do a personality makeover or, you know, something like that. I think that's just danger zone.
I mean, I figure if, you know, if you're just yourself or let's say an enhanced version of yourself, and people don't like you, well, they don't like you, but you're just being yourself. Whereas if you make up this persona and people don't like you, you're not even being yourself. So, I mean, why are you making up a persona?
Imagine having to keep that persona up.
Yeah, has to be a certain image. Like for me, as soon as I started watching Catherine's TikToks and podcasts, she is a great storyteller. I'm here for the stories. I mean, it is educational, but the entertainment in the storytelling part.
Thanks, Ezra.
I don't know, Jeff, is funny, is, I don't know. Jeff is a superstar too.
No, I'm just an amplification of an AI.
Well, you know, sometimes when I see you and you're not wearing your Zoom outfit, I am a little thrown, because to me, your persona is where, like, you are right now. So when I see you with a different outfit on, which I get to see sometimes behind the scenes, then I think, does Jeff actually, does he do stuff like sit on the couch and just watch TV? Because I just feel like you are in that box wearing your shirt and just, you know, your soothing voice and the whole thing. But maybe you just eat chips on the couch sometimes. And that would be incongruous to me because I don't know you that way.
That would be pretty unusual, actually.
Yeah, I'd imagine that.
But that's a good warning, though. You know, Amanda, for those of you that are listening and you weren't able to watch the live conversation that we just had, Amanda had that really great pink background, and she showed us it was photography paper. And I have this white background that I've had for a couple of years now. It's important to remember, this gets into branding, right? This has become my brand. You've got to have the white and the black shirt and all that. And people notice when you don't. Be yep. careful.
Right. Like when you have your butterscotch background, we know something's wrong.
Right. The mom's mobile studio. I was recording a video today for somebody, and it was just a Loom. It was a thank you video. I was just sending them a note, basically. And it's cold. Right? It's cold in Indiana right now, and Massachusetts, where both of you are. So it's cold down here in the basement. And I've had a hoodie on all day, and I got ready to record this video, just like a minute long, right? And I had a hoodie on, and I went, nope, I've got to change. I've got to take the hoodie off. I've got to put my black dress shirt on, my Zoom shirt, if you call it that, because that is what people know and expect. So you've got to be careful. You create an image, a brand, you know, it may not be an accent. It may be a white background and a black shirt, but people are going to ask, hey, where's the white background or the black shirt? Or, I mean, there have been stories, Erica Spade's sons didn't recognize me because I didn't have the right shirt on. Or I was in a different setting. You know, they're used to, these are little kids, which is fantastic, but they're little kids.
Yeah.
You know, so something to think about if you're going to.
Yeah. If you're creating a brand, make sure there's something you want to stick with.
Yeah. I kind of sometimes think of, I don't know if it's me or not, but sometimes think of the presenters who go on stage with very provocative costumes and do crazy things, and I don't know how would that work, like, but sometimes I'm tempted to, you know, it's an entertaining idea.
Well, what would your costume be?
I know.
Yeah, what would it be?
I don't know.
I feel much more comfortable dressed like a sheep or a bear, something like that. That's not, you know, I just feel like that would be okay. I'd be okay with that, but not being like, I don't know what, like a dress like a showgirl. I would never, never, never go out like that. But if I'm an animal and I'm not like looking like, hey, look at me, I'm trying to be really, stunning, I guess, you know, if you're obviously just wearing a rabbit outfit, that's a rabbit outfit's just what it is.
Rabbit.
Okay. You know,
I have to think about this.
I don't know. I'll have to think about flower, that. Why I wouldn't go out as a showgirl, but
a garden.
Daisy. I think it's more like an echinacea because of the anyway, we won't get into that.
Well, I've never considered dressing as a furry animal.
Oh, it was kind of comforting having a costume on like that.
This is a real moment of growth here.
So I have seen another session, the BSA session of Amanda Hennessy, and she was wearing these same or probably different color, but I think they were just saying big earrings and bracelets. And I think that's also kind of, and the same pink background. I think that's sort of a brand or persona.
Brand. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to think about in this, you know, her whole book and her presentation today.
Yeah, there is. And I think, again, I said this at the beginning and at the end when we were talking to Amanda, I think it's a really important topic because it's not about going to a conference and speaking necessarily. You know, it could be about your podcast. You know, Catherine, you obviously have a podcast in addition to this one. And Israel, you have a video series that you do and you teach. And Catherine, you're doing the community classes as well. And you know, there are some out there that simply have to go in front of the city council or the historic preservation commission or the school board or, you know, a couple that you're designing a house for. All of this kind of plays into that. And it's how do we get better at communicating? I think it's just bottom line for or sort of baseline for all of this. So I appreciate the conversation with Amanda today. It was really entertaining and fun, and she's got a lot of great tips. And I would recommend anybody, especially if you're starting out speaking or you're really nervous about it. Her book is called Your Guide to Public Speaking. Build your confidence, find your voice, and inspire your audience. And she does have a lot of great tips in there, a lot of great lessons in there to help you become a better speaker, whatever your stage is. So I encourage you to check that out. Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entre Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entre Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this, and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week, and in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entre Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.